Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This is a special Purim podcast from Rabbi Daniel Landes. Rabbi Daniel Landes is the director of the Pardes Institute here in Jerusalem. And now, Rabbi Daniel Landes.
Purim Sameach, Larry. What a great story is the Purim Megillah. So many different parts to it. Not only parts, and the parts are connected, and we love that, but also different ways of kind of putting the story together. Given the fact that almost the entire story takes place indoors within this incredible palace, as I think about it, and doors are opening and doors are closing, or on the grounds of this enormous palace, with periodic ventures outside, and we'll get to one of those. And whenever we go outside, it feels like one of these old dramas from the BBC, in which it's shot almost completely indoors, and there's upstairs and downstairs, and different classes of people interacting, also usually within some sort of mansion. And then when they have an outdoor scene, it looks so different and feels so different. So it's because it's mainly an indoor story. And I was thinking a lot of doors opening and doors closing, and the notion that sometimes in this opening and closing and going through, there's a kind of a maze. And one of the techniques of the story, I think, that's used is doors opening, but then it being closed, and not sure if it'll be open again. And that creates a kind of tension, dynamic tension, that begs to be resolved. Will it be resolved? So instead of just speaking abstractly, I'd like to get to one concern of that. And that concern really takes place towards the beginning of the book. And that really is in chapter two. And this is at the point in which Esther has become the new queen. And this part of the story has gone very quickly. And Mordechai hangs around the court. I think he's not too obtrusive. Mordechai is a player. He knows how things work. We saw that with how he is able to instruct Esther what to do and how to do it. And he's in the Shar HaMelech. He's in the king's court, or king's gate, more literally. And he hears about Bigtan Viteresh. These are the two chamberlains. They're the gatekeepers. Eunuchs, not a great position to be in. Shomrei Hasaf, they keep the door. Gatekeepers, literally, which means they had a lot of power. There's been a lot of change within the governmental structure, or will be. And they want their peace, and they want to put their hands upon the king, which means they want to kill him. And the matter became known to Mordechai. Now, how does he know about this? This can only be, the Gemara talks about the fact that he's a member, that was a member of the Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin knew 70 languages. This was the seat of the entire empire. Bigtan and Teresh must have been speaking in whatever their dialect was, but he knew that dialect. And I think the Talmud, in a sense, is very attuned to the fact is, how does Mordechai know? And I'm saying Mordechai knew, not only because of the wisdom, if he was a member of the Sanhedrin, certainly would be helpful. But he knows because he made his business to know things. You only know things if you're a player. You only know things if you're involved. You don't know things in the way that when I was in the Purim play as a child, I didn't play Bigtan, I didn't play Teresh, and for that matter, I didn't play Mordechai, I certainly didn't play Esther. But I was in that scene, because Mordechai overhears Bigtan Viteresh, and Mordechai overhears it as he hides behind the tree. I played the tree. So I started thinking about this very early, like, how did Mordechai know? Mordechai knew because he knew how to go into the proper places. He knew where the political intrigue was. And so he finds out Mordechai, he has a conduit to get the information to King Ahasuerus, which is, of course, his cousin Esther, the queen. And Esther tells the king, and they searched through the matter, and they made my English translation to the Vivacacha, made an inquisition, and found that it was true. They hung the two of them on the tree. I guess they hung them on me because I was playing that tree. But Yikotei B'Sefer Divrei HaYomim L'Fnei HaMelech, it was written down in the Book of Chronicles before the king, and as we know, totally forgotten about it. As readers, we forget about it. So this is a shut door. It's shut in our mind. It's shut in reality. It plays no role. In fact, when Mordechai later on wants Esther to go to the king and to beg for the Jews, Mordechai does not come up with the idea, oh, tell him what I did for Bigtan Viteresh, and regarding Bigtan Viteresh, I saved him from the assassins. It doesn't even arise in his mind. Perhaps not powerful enough. It sounds powerful. He forgot about it. Or is it just that it was already ancient history? So that, somewhere in our consciousness, because we know the story, kind of builds up a kind of demand for it to come alive. It can't just be suppressed, what Mordechai did for the king. Well, we know that later on it happens. In the middle of the whole intrigue about how Esther's figuring out how to save our people, on that night, chapter 6, and this is in the middle of the whole notion of the two parties that Esther invites Ahasuerus and Haman to. In the middle of all that, on that night, the king could not sleep, and he was so bored, the way I read it, or he was so interested, as you may read it, to bring the Sefer Zichronot Divrei HaYomim, bring that Book of Chronicles, and let them be read. And as they're reading it, he sees the story. And they read to him the story. Yeah, that took place. How do we recompense Mordechai? No way. There's no, we didn't do it in any way. The readers of the story tell him, no, the king, you never thanked him. And then that whole wonderful comedic drama in which King says, well, who's out there on duty watch tonight for my major staff? Oh, yeah, Haman comes in. You know, what do you do? King says, for someone who the king wants to reward, Haman thinks to himself, let the top men of the kingdom lead such the man who the king wishes to honor, thinking it's himself, through the streets and say, and wearing the king's robe and wearing all the king's and the king's king's trappings. Let the royal apparel be upon him and the king's horse and the royal crown. And then King says, good idea, take the royal trappings, take the royal crown, take the royal horse, and put them on Mordechai. And then we have that delicious scene in which Haman has to do this for Mordechai. But this also becomes a shut door, because this honoring of Mordechai in no way has any impact at all upon the extermination order. This is kind of like the king outsourced it. He outsourced it to Haman what to do, and Haman has to fulfill it. And Mordechai is given all this glory. But in terms of its practical significance, political significance for the moment of saving the Jews, it has no impact at all. So once again, as the door is open, the door is closed. This is tremendous irony, that the man who represents, in terms of who he is, the Jewish people, the man who, in a sense, had caused the problem, paradigmatically, by saying no to Haman, I mean, no, Haman, I won't bow down to you. Whoever I am, I won't bow down to you. that Jewish part of me will not allow me to bow down to you. And who, in a sense, the Jewish know that caused this problem, the Jewish know, which is a yes to God and a no to everyone else. Obedience to God is resistance to tyranny. I think that was Thomas Jefferson. And that could have been Mordecai's expression. It doesn't mean anything. I mean, it means, it turns out that it becomes a foretelling, a adumbration, a kind of prophecy of what will take place. But I'm on the practical side. The practical side is not helping us at this moment. So Esther does what she does, and Esther does it all. Esther does it all. She does what she does. She does it magnificently. And Haman is deposed. He's deposed and he's hung. His sons are also taken care of at a later point. But what's significant is whatever happens to the story and what importance does it take? Well, it happens. The original part, which is the saving of the king by Mordecai. How it then is rewarded, which I had just described as a rewarding that is insufficient. That's a public show of Mordecai in the king's trappings, but doesn't seem to do anything. Does have a practical fulfillment. And that's when the king allows the Jews to organize themselves and to defend themselves. And at that point, it speaks about how the fear of Mordecai was upon the leaders of the king's empire. You know, the empire is a very big place. And it must have been a very busy time for Mordecai to get the Jews organized to fight for their survival and to get rid of their enemies and to make sure that day in Shushan and the rest of the empire, the Jews knew what to do. But the fear of them the fear of Mordecai was upon them. Of course, why the fear? Because that image of the Jew Mordecai wearing the king's crown and with all the trappings being taken through the, not a satrap, but taken through the center of the entire Persian Empire and being led by Haman, who was then hung on the gallows he meant for Mordecai. That's an image that must have spread throughout the empire. No one wanted in that way to follow Haman's fate. Everyone there saw what in that image of Mordecai wearing the robes and the crown and on the royal horse. That's whether we like it or not, and we might not like it. That's the leader that the king has given us for now. So the buildup of the story of the original saving of the king's life from Big Town of Teresh by Mordecai, which was forgotten. It was written down. That's important. That's the door open. But then was shut. It was forgotten. The fact that the king remembers and honors Mordecai in this strange way, which had no practical significance. In fact, it could have been ironic in the reverse, in the sense that here Mordecai is being honored, but he later on will be taken out to be hung. All that has turned around and come with full force to this moment that they're ready to obey and to do whatever Mordecai has said. And, of course, this is only one of the wonderful, wonderful links within this terrific story. Enjoy Purim. Send me in your links. All good things.
Thanks very much, Rabbi Landes. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.